The content of this program is meant for educational purposes only, because knowledge is power. However, the controversial subject matter discussed may not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, staff, or its advertisers.
They fought the longest war in American history. They fought the longest war in American history. In 1965, Vietnam seemed like just another foreign war, but it wasn't. It was different in many ways, and so were those who did the fighting. In World War II, the average age of the combat soldier was 26. In Vietnam, he was 19. In Vietnam, he was 19. In Vietnam, he was 19. In Vietnam, he was 19.
Wow. That's some powerful stuff. The first time I heard that song, I started crying. That really hurt. Knowing what I know, because I served during that era, and I want to thank our guest for his service as well, because he lost both legs below the knees. I know you're all thinking, Lieutenant Dan. Yeah, kind of like that. Gump. You know, hey, the thing is, you're looking at a war that, you know, was virtually a police action. You saw Good Morning Vietnam. I watched that movie so many times. It was unbelievable. And you look at the politics. Yeah. And I tell you what, the gentleman that we've got right now, the Honorable Alan B. Clark, is a 1963 West Point graduate and a survivor of PTSD that we heard about in the song. That's 19 by Paul Hardcastle. And this happened to him, losing his legs below the knees in 1967 following an enemy mortar barrage while serving in Vietnam. He's a recipient of a Silver Star, America's third highest decoration for gallantry in action, a Purple Heart, and a Combat Infantryman's Badge. He's also served as a special assistant to the governor of Texas and as the Assistant Secretary for Veterans Liaison and Program Coordination and Director of the National Cemetery System in the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. In 1993, he was recognized by the Military Chaplains Association with its National Citizenship Award. He's a frequent motivational speaker. In early 2018, he received the Patriot Award from the Greater Dallas Military Foundation. Later that year, the Sons of Flag Legacy Award. He spent the last 4 years, as I have been told, or it took him 4 years, to put out the book, to write it, Soldier's Blood and Bloodied Money, the subtitle, Wars and the Ruling Elites. And there is a foreword, as a matter of fact, by somebody we've had on the show, Lieutenant Colonel Alan B. West, USA retired, member of the 112th U.S. Congress. So you have to understand that that song that I just played, instead of our opener, is not taken lightly by me or anybody that's been and knows what's going on. And I'm going to have Alan Clark on for this hour, and your phone calls are welcome. 844-769-2944, because the contents of this book, and I got to tell you, I have only gotten up to page 208 of 478 pages. You know how long it takes to write a book like that? Alan B. Clark, and you were a captain. I'm going to tell you something. I've already had people calling the show this morning saying they're going to buy the book. So I am serious. Thank you, God, for somebody like you that did the research you did to put this book together. I'm reading through this stuff, and I'm beside myself. I did not realize how deep this went into the banksters, into the war machines, into financing both sides to kill our own troops. I mean, this is just – the amount of research is just huge. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much. If I might digress a minute from my book and your distinct reading of it, my goodness gracious, the actual gentleman who was the real man in Vietnam, that Good Morning Vietnam, I actually sat next to him on a stage at a dinner about 30 years ago. It's quite interesting after meeting him to see the movie, you know.
Adrian Cronauer. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Well,
how did he tell you how close? I mean, you saw the movie, obviously. I think most Vietnam vets like me did. But the thing is that you actually sat next to the guy. Did you ask him, did you really yell, "Good morning, Vietnam"?
Yeah, well, I'm not quite that vocal, but it was 30 years ago at least when I was at the Department of Veterans Affairs, and I really don't remember the conversation. It was just very pleasant.
Wow.
And, it wasn't nearly as boisterous as the movie would have him be in his personality, but he was a delightful gentleman and very, very kind. And it was a Vietnam veteran program, and it was really nice to have him there, you know.
That is so enlightening. I'm glad that he was there, really, because I'm sure he inspired a lot of people.
He did.
So now it took you 4 years to write the book, and I got to ask the ultimate 40,000-foot view question, what motivated you to do this?
Yeah. Well, having been in my own war and being severely wounded and taking years to recover, I had a 14-week stay in a close psychiatric ward, in 1968. And then I'd gone to work, amazingly enough, in 70 after an MBA at SMU with Ross Perot. It was just an amazing gift to me and everything at age 28 to work for this gentleman who had had so much publicity already and continued through his life being one of probably the best veteran supporter in the whole country with everything he did for us, and to have the opportunity to work for him. And I was sent on a mission assigned by him and the company to do an investigation, inspection of some assets at a New York Wall Street firm that he was going to buy, and he eventually bought it. But I pushed myself, you know. I was only 28 years old and 2 years out of the hospital. My psychiatrist in the hospital said, Alan, when you get out of graduate school, he convinced me not to go to law school. He said, that's too much pressure on you. You need to take it easy for several years, not put yourself under pressure because you've had that post-traumatic stress disorder break. You've been under psychiatrist once a week for 2 years already, or will be for several years, and I was, and I took antidepressants for several years. But I remember the psychiatrist in the Army hospital, you know, said, well, now look, be sure to get a nice, easy, soft job with no pressure. So what I do, I go to work for Ross Perot, which is one of the most go-getting companies in the country in 1970 and having gone public in 68. So I've always been a person that I really am disciplined, but I don't like orders very much. So anyway, I didn't do that, and I took the job with Ross, and I broke down again, had to go in the hospital for just a week. But because of that, I kind of lost my confidence, and I couldn't work for him. So he allowed me to stay on the payroll for a few weeks, and then I had an exit interview with him. He said, Alan, what a kind man he was. He said, you get yourself straightened out and stable. This job will be open for you for a year. Now, who in the world would ever offer that kind of an open-ended invitation to someone to work at a company? You know, you can see why I think so highly of him. He wrote the foreword to my first book, which was Wounded Soldier, Healing Warrior, which is out of print right now, but yeah, still a few on Amazon. So that's kind of my Ross Perot story. But, you know, to complete, if I may, a little bit more about the post-traumatic stress, you know, all of us have issues from life, from first responders, police, and especially people that have been under fire in combat or seen people die next to them, and all the different issues, you know, POWs, you name it. So mine was obviously what you call medically an external precipitating stress, you might say, a lot of stress. And so I took pills for several years, but, you know, I got through it, and I have a website called combatfaith.com, and I have examples there of people that have suffered with post-traumatic stress from all the wars, back to World War II. I give specific examples of people that I personally talked to or communicated with by email, whatever the case may be, to find out what their stories were and how they got pulled out of it and my suggestions for healing. So that's kind of, in a nutshell, my PTSD story.
But it's so deep, and I know that, you know, what it was in the song is almost 800,000 men are still fighting the Vietnam War. I mean, there's some stuff that you can't shake. There's stuff you're always going to be reliving. It's just how you deal with it, how you handle it, and that comes with time and the willingness to get healed. And I think you went through that from reading your book, and like I said, there's 478 pages of very hard-hitting research that's in this book. And I literally, when I opened it up, I did not know what I was in for. And I'll tell you, I had to get through all of the, you know, you got the websites listed. When it said wars and the ruling elites, I said, uh-oh, I have a feeling that this book is going to be deeper than I expected. You have all of these folks who are nationally known writing kudos and accolades about this book. Obviously, they've looked at it. They've looked at the research. They've seen the fact that you're a previous author. You're quoting a lot of different people, including Ross Perot, Dole. I mean, you're quoting a lot of different people here that we know. Their names we know. And, you know, you're getting through pages and pages and pages of that before you even get to the table of contents. And the book was written in 2019, and now, you know, it's published, it's out there, And it's called Soldier's Blood and Bloodied Money, Wars and the Ruling Elites. I want to get into some of this stuff because you don't get started into the book until page 43, because there's so many people that are looking at this thing and evaluating it in its proper perspective, including the quotes. This is the thing that totally blew me away, Alan, when I was reading this. I'm just like, oh, my God, this guy has really dived down some serious rabbit holes. I mean, we have some very, very smart listeners out there on the Power Hour that listen to this stuff. And by the time all this stuff filters out, we have about a million people that are exposed to this. And I mean, they're all scratching their heads. Once you read this book post, I am telling you, you went into the spiritual angle, and then you started examining how the spiritual battle that we are in right now evolved, or I should say devolved, into all of these scenarios that you play out as far, and you name names, which I really appreciated you going into the historical perspective of all of this stuff.
Well, a couple things for transparency's sake. Some of those quotes, like Ross Perot and Bob Dole, they were really from my first book. My daughter is my extraordinary editor. She has a Harvard MBA, and she was very smart.
Of course.
She put that together, but she took some of those quotes from what people previously had said about my first book or second book in some cases, just to kind of establish who I am and what I am and who I am and so forth. So I want to be sure the record is clear that those people did not get the book to have an opportunity to review this specific book. And I do thank you for the observation that you have, which is probably one of the best that I've ever heard from an interviewer relative to the composition and comprehensiveness of the book. And I thank you so much for that. Actually, the book, as you indicate, is a long book. I thought originally about just breaking it out in three sections, you know. And you actually have to go almost to the last chapter to get the exact understanding and relationship of my post-traumatic stress and what a psychiatrist who is now, a retired psychiatrist who is now deceased, he and I were great friends, and we talked a lot about that. So he wrote some things, and the only way that I was able, after about 8 or 10 years or so of psychiatrists and antidepressants, to heal from my post-traumatic stress, and I'll get to that in a second, but I'm not sure that we ever heal from the memories, okay? I mean, we always have triggers. I mean, from time to time, you know, I look down, I'll be watching TV on my sofa with my wife, and I look down, I see my stumps. And, you know, I can't help but feel sad. You know, I say, okay, I was a gung-ho soldier. I volunteered for West Point, you know, to go to West Point, get my education, become an officer. I volunteered for Vietnam, which I did, and my first wife didn't find that out till after I got hurt and came back, but she eventually forgave me after 25 years. She harbored resentment for 25 years. And then, you know, everything that I've been through, but it was only by the grace of God that I was healed, number one. Number two, that I was able to get my faith act together and understand the big picture of good versus evil, God versus the devil, and that I was just a little pawn down there in a war down here on earth, you know? And that so many of us go, we don't know what wars are about. We don't know what the real sociological, ideological reasons we go to war. Definitely don't know the things that I have come up with over several hundred years for reasons that people go to war, and the powers behind getting us into wars and make money. They don't care if we die. I mean, that is how negative I have become about so many of these banksters, et cetera, as you so called it, which is very accurate. We don't know why we're going. There's not enough education and information about who the enemy is, not just on the field to shoot and fire and kill each other in the jungles or in the deserts or the mountains of Afghanistan and Iraq today, or the northern area in North Korea when our troops went in 1950 all the way up to the Yalu River and the Chinese volunteers came. We didn't understand all that. We weren't given indoctrination. The communists do a much better job of education and indoctrination. How else could they send those people down the border and from North Vietnam to South Vietnam? Says, you either come back dead or you come back when we've won the war. And they're down there for years. They don't have R&R like we did, you know, rest and relaxation. I mean, you're talking about dedication, and they do that. The kamikaze pilots, World War II, so dedicated to the emperor. I mean, to take a plane and say, I'm going to die, but I'm going to fly this plane into that Navy ship, you know? And so I've kind of elaborated a little bit, and I apologize for trying
no,
to.
No, not at all. I mean, this is from your heart, sir. I mean, this is what you're telling us, the eventual reader of this book, exactly where you're coming from, and people need to hear it. I mean, there's no getting around that. You're talking about naming names, the section two of this book, Players and Consequences. I mean, you're talking about the arms merchants. You're talking about the Morgans and the Rothschilds. You're talking about the industrialists. You even mentioned Eisenhower. I mean, I'm very familiar with military-industrial complex. That section had me glued. I couldn't stop reading by the time I hit page 109 and started looking and got all the way through to media and propaganda. I am just, like, blown away, and I'm going, God, look at the research in this, how deep dive. And, I mean, you look at history, at American history, and where we have been led down that path and duped into believing, and now you see this crap going on in Ukraine and a proxy war that we could end up involved in, and we are actually spending money we don't have to finance Ukraine to fight Russia, which could end us up in a nuclear holocaust. I don't know what your take is on that based on the information you put in the book, and I'm going to ask you for your opinion very quickly before we go to break.
Yeah, well, number one, I look at it from both the Russian side and the defensive side from Ukraine. You know, why did Russia do it? Number one, I believe that Putin, being the KGB background guy, these are people that he's been involved in. He has been involved in the shadowy world. I think he really has a concept and desire to reestablish as much as possible in a larger sense, strategic sense, reestablish the Russian Empire in a way. That's why he's encroached into Crimea. That's the reason he encroached into Georgia. That's the reason he's encroaching into Ukraine. But his side of the story is that we had biolabs, which I believe have been documented in Ukraine. Ukraine right. has been a definite country that has had a lot of money laundering. I think it's probably all over the world, but especially for some reason in Ukraine. So there have been right. a lot of that justify that. Ukraine is just trying to protect themselves. They have these battalions who may have a Nazi connection. I mean, Nazi, not just...
I got to hear about that. Hold that thought. Captain Clark, hold that thought. We'll be back after this break with more of the comments. And you're welcome to call in, folks, and talk to Alan Clark right after the break. Stay with us.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
I don't know where to start. There's so many products you guys offer. I think one of the first things I ever ordered from you guys was your clay. The clay is miraculous. I could not do without that. And the charcoal, you know, you can get yourself in a bathtub to kind of help take the toxins out. So just those two alone, but I could go on to the Optivita silver lozenges. Of course, then the Aurega Resp. and the P73, the oil of oregano, and your Vitamir toothpaste. Again, I could go on and on and on.
Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Can your IRA stand up to the next financial crisis that our top economists are saying is at our doorsteps? By allocating a percentage of your IRA into physical gold and silver with a tax-free rollover, you can diversify and safeguard your holdings from turbulent markets and economic downturns by putting your IRA back on the gold standard. J.P. Morgan recently warned investors of an economic hurricane heading our way. Find out how to safeguard your assets with a tax-free rollover with a Genesis Gold IRA, the only IRA that can hold physical precious metals. Call now for your free gold and silver report. Protect your IRA today with one simple phone call and learn how to qualify for up to $10,000 in free silver. Call Genesis Gold Group, empowering faith-driven stewardship at 800-200-GOLD. That's 800-200-GOLD. 800-200-4653.
The Power Hour has been in existence since the turn of the 21st century. It is more critical than ever for you to sign up for our free newsletter and our breaking news. Simply text the word Power Hour to 22828 on your mobile phone, or sign up when you visit thepowerhour.com. Our website again is thepowerhour.com, or text Power Hour to 22828. Together, our legacy will live on for centuries.
Boost your immune system naturally this year with oil of oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that oil of oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.
Listen, one of the things that was not mentioned was the oregadent. That's for when you brush your teeth. You just take it and put your toothpaste on your toothbrush and just take a couple drops of oregadent and put that on your toothbrush and brush your teeth. And I'm telling you, that stuff, once I brush my teeth, I don't want to eat anything for a while. Anyway, it's wonderful. So I use it a couple times a day, and your teeth really do feel so fresh. It's going to help a lot the next time I go to the dentist. So I really appreciate you giving me the heads up about that one.
Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829. Right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Just recently, we both started on the lithium balance. I want to keep my memory. My two in-laws are dealing with, the Alzheimer's. They're in their 90s, and I see it. I don't want to be like that, and I've heard you talk about lithium to, you know, improve our memory and keep us up there.
Call 877-817-9829. That number again is 877-817-9829. Buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Does Big Pharma have a hold of you? ThePowerMall.com believes everything the body needs is provided by nature, unlike prescription drugs that aren't meant to cure but cover up your symptoms and contain addicting chemicals. Strauss Heart Drops are 100% all natural. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops by calling Jay at 1-877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or order online at ThePowerMall.com today.
Thirty-four minutes after the hour of 12 noon Central Time, and it's Thursday, November 10, 2022. Dave Krieger with you on the Power Hour. Just news of note, Lauren Boebert, who is running in Colorado's 3rd Congressional District, has now pulled ahead in that race to try to save her incumbency in the U.S. Congress. And, of course, now the officials in Arizona, for those of you paying attention to that snafu out there, and that's exactly what it is, explaining about the printer system, which they seem to still be having problems with. And there are tens of thousands of votes affected by this. It seems to me like they're spending more time blabbering in the media rather than trying to fix the problem. But they got to have their spokesman out there trying to appease the masses. They almost think we're stupid. And I'll tell you what, if it had not been for West Pointer Alan B. Clark, who's a retired Army officer captain assigned to Special Forces, writing this book, I'm telling you what, the perspectives that I have after reading it would not have been there had I not. So I'm encouraging you to buy the book, Soldier's Blood and Bloodied Money. Can you buy it right on combatfaith.com, Alan?
Or no, do you, you have to... It's self-published on Kindle Direct Publishing on Amazon, yeah. It's 1995 listed there.
Wow, for 478 pages of damning information, that's pretty good. The thing is, no, I mean, there's some stuff in there. You talk about media and propaganda, and I mean, we're living through this right now.
Yeah. Would you like me to say a little bit more about Ukraine, if I may?
I wanted to get back to that because we were talking about money laundering when we went to the break, and I'm sorry, but we have to take that dutiful break at the bottom of the hour. But the thing is that you were talking about Ukraine and money laundering, and now I also know that there's sex trafficking and there's a number of other things going on. You talked about the biolabs. Victoria Nuland's already confirmed that there are biolabs there. There seems to be this big race to create more weapons of mass destruction like the COVID-19 jab, which we've been researching the last 2 years, and we pretty much know the whole history. It's just we can't get Fauci and everybody else to admit that our own University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, was responsible for creating the bloody stuff. So, and these mRNA jabs and everything everybody else is getting, I mean, now they want to lie to our troops and give them the jab when they told them it was a flu shot. I'm beside myself how they've ruined our military. And so as far as Ukraine goes, first off, I'm going to let you finish the subject matter, the thought process on money laundering. And then I'm going to take Sherry's phone call because Sherry is holding from Kansas. Go ahead and finish your thought process on Ukraine.
Well, you know, in 2014, they had a government in Ukraine that was really slanting towards Soviet, you know, Russia. And so we had a part, as we have many times in the past, with our forces, you know, the ones we're talking about. And they, there was a change of government there, let's put it that way. And then, you know, there was a lot of controversy about Putin being told specifically that they would not try to get Ukraine into NATO because he's concerned about NATO being a big enough force that could push into Russia. Of course, everybody that's gone to Russia, Napoleon and Hitler, they've regretted that they pushed into Russia, of course, in past historically. But there's been a lot of controversy about Ukraine. Ukraine is an amazing country. It's been the breadbasket of the world for a long time. And so there's both sides on that. But the bottom line is, statistic I heard this morning, read this morning, Russia has suffered 100,000 deaths of their combatants, their warriors. Now think about that. I mean, everybody think about it. 100,000 families in Russia do not have that member of their family alive anymore. And, you know, 450,000 for us, World War II, 58,000 for us, Vietnam. And it just goes on and on and on. It just never stops, you know.
And the U.S. government is financing a lot of the part of it. The folks in the EU and all the countries participating in NATO, what they're not doing. The United States is just sending millions and millions, if not billions, of dollars over there to support this proxy war. And I mean, they're no better off than the elitists that you talk about, these banksters you talk about in the book, because now they're financing the deaths of both sides. Because Ukraine, I mean, look how many civilians and casualties. We've even lost some of our own media over there.
Sure. Well, you know, we have sent troops into Poland, and Romania to a larger degree than we've had just on a regular basis over there in Europe. But, you know, let's look at, you know, I like to look at what's called cui bono, who profits. Okay, all these weapons that we are buying and sending over there, number one, there is no real safeguard of accounting of are they going to where they're supposed to go, or the rich people, the elitists, the oligarchs in Ukraine having a rake-off, you know, before they actually get down to the frontline troops. Number
Bingo.
Two, we take troops from our own national defense. What if we have another battle over in Asia or something? You know, it just these drones have been very important, but we're depleting our reserves of those. And just real quickly on the vaccine, why do we have a 15,000 man person deficit in recruiting in the United States Army this year? Heard that just yesterday. A lot of these people say we don't want this wokeness in the military anymore, and we don't want to be forced to get that shot. That could be the reason. They wonder, why can't we get more people in the military? And why can't we meet our requirements? Well, I'll stop with that.
I mean, no, I get it completely. And, I mean, everybody else is thinking that way, too. Sherry in Kansas, you're on the phone with Alan B. Clark, retired Army captain from Vietnam. Go ahead. What's your question?
Yes, Captain Clark. I'm just a little bit younger than you. I graduated high school in 72. And I fell for the patriotism crap. They were feeding us to send you guys to Vietnam. And I really didn't start waking up till about almost 19 years later. I started listening to Tom Valentine on shortwave. And one of my most favorite guests he had on was Colonel Prouty, Fletcher Prouty.
Yeah.
And he would be real candid, and you know, and I think you're right about, you know, these guys going in, but I really wish, you know, that you would write some kind of condensed thing that we could give to our kids and our grandkids and it'll be my great grandkids if I live that long. On why you shouldn't go in because of who these wars are being fought for. You know, my son was in the Army for 20 years, and every time he came up for reenlistment, I tried to get him not to reenlist because I knew what was going on. Luckily, he only took the old anthrax vaccine. He didn't take the one that was hurting so many people, the one that Admiral Crow was making.
Yeah. Well, what I would have to say about is that despite everything, there are enemies of the United States out there, and there are enemies of other countries, and that we do have to make a certain degree of an effort with either economic sanctions, as we tried with Russia, and diplomacy to try ahead of time off and decide whether we really need to commit our flesh and blood and sacrifice and blood, sweat, and tears to these different things. But we cannot say in terms of the world situation today spiritually, God versus the devil, good versus evil, we can't just say, okay, well, the borders are open, which they are, and the world is open. The United States is not going to have a military anymore. We still have the strongest military in the world. We still have an awful lot of very dedicated patriots that have joined the military. And today, people say, well, would you do it again? Well, of course I wouldn't do it again and lose my legs and go through all the physical and emotional suffering that I went through. But would I suggest not to go in the military at all? No, we still need to have people in the military. The military needs cleaned up. You know, this wokeness and this everything they're trying to do, and I've gotten firsthand information on that from people on active duty and recent retirees. They need to stop that stuff so our people will be motivated, then we'll be pitted against each other. So we need to stay, and we need to still have a strong military ready to fight the bad guys in the world. There's no question about that. We can't back off. We can't say, oh, don't go in the military because the things that I wrote about, which have been historically accurate for several hundred years, and it will not change till the Lord comes back, because there's something evil in the society that inflames people, and greed and riches and this cui bono concept of who profits. So, you know, the bottom line of what I heard you say, I agree with a lot with, but I cannot say don't join our military. I really
well,
can't.
Well, now can you, it's the people that are running it. I bet you can't name me one right war we should have been in since the war of 1812.
Well, I mean, Hitler, Hitler and the imperialists in Japan were people that we needed to fight, okay? Now, the fact is that Roosevelt probably, and I've got information on that if I were to write another book, which I don't think I'm going to do at age 80, but we knew ahead of time that the Japanese were planning an attack in the Pacific. We knew that. And I believe, personally, with what I've heard, Franklin Delano Roosevelt hid that so that he could have, we've been attacked, we must declare war on Imperial Japan, so therefore Germany gets in. That's a war that we had to be in. Civil War was a war we had to be in the country, if that's what it took to get rid of the horrible example of slavery. So there have been wars after 1812 that have been justified, for sure. Now, the challenge with North Korea attacking South Korea, what would have been next? Japan. I was in Japan in the summer of 1950 when the North Korean communists came into South Korea. They had pushed even our troops that got in there real quickly up against the Pusan perimeter. They would have come into Japan next. That's the whole goal of communism. That's a lot of what the country is today. Socialist progressives who are really deep down, the next step is communism and totalitarianism and dictatorship in the United States of America. That's why we must constantly fight that. The communists have been on the move ever since the middle 30s. They've taken stuff from us. They've taken our American industries, have given them a bunch of stuff. There were trucks and jeeps and weapons used against us in Korea that came into Haiphong Harbor because the Russians and Chinese came in and helped the North Vietnamese, and we never bombed those harbors till about 5 or 6 years after the war started. So all of these things just all lead to the same thing, the evil to prevail as today, communism, and it's gotten a foothold in the United States already.
That's sad. Sherry, we appreciate your call. Thank you so much. Ron in California, you're on the line with Alan B. Clark. Go ahead.
Well, hello there, Mr. Clark. So happy to hear from you.
Glad to be talking to you.
I think you're a wonderful example. Well, my name is Ron. I'm out here in California. I'm age 71, and I go back to where the military would come into our high school and ask all the young males that were age 18 and over to come to the front of the room. And at that point, you were escorted down to the bus, a school bus, and you were officially in the Marine Corps or whatever elected you, and that was called the draft.
Yeah, right.
And
well,
I think you recall those. Now, there were people that volunteered because they were going to get drafted anyway, so they wanted to go in with some honor and dignity. So they were, while they were on the bus, they would say, well, do you want to just volunteer? And, we moved from that in the Vietnam War to where the average age of the dead soldiers was 18. Of the 58,000 Americans that died, 50,000 or thereabouts were 18 and 19 years old.
Sure. They were the grunt.
We lost that.
I'm sorry.
I remember... But one thing I wanted to call you about is what changed in our generation was the Vietnam people that came back, the young kids our age, and they would tell us. I was 17 when this happened. They couldn't take me. They'd say, don't go. And I'm talking about my own family. No, you don't need to do that. There's got to be a better way, because they'd come back if they did come back alive, they were injured. and they would, I think it was in Japan, they would go ahead and stay in Japan, you know, for months, healing in the hospital.
Yeah, well, I was able to come back, amazingly enough. I was back in the United States 7 days. I was taken off the battlefield quickly. My first wife originally was contacted to go to Camp Zama Hospital in Japan for my rehab. She was ready to go, and all of a sudden I call her from San Francisco and says, I said, I'm back in the United States. I'm heading toward Brook Army Hospital in San Antonio. So I got there in 7 days with one leg off below the knee and the other leg broken in five places. So you talk about injuries and a place that we shouldn't have been. I know all about that, okay? So then started 15 months of rehab in the hospital, 20 surgeries total, right leg taken off after 10 days, and the only advantages, if I may lend a light note to a very serious downer subject, is I was originally 5'9", and so they came to my bed, the prosthetist or doctor, and says, Captain, we need to, we're going to fix you with artificial legs. How tall do you want to be? I had been 5'9", so my dad had been 6'2". I said, 6'2". He waits about 30 seconds. He said, well, actually, Captain, you'll walk better if you're shorter than you were before. I said, how short would that be? He said, 5'8 or 5'7". Went to 5'8". About 10 years later, I went to 5'11", then 6'1", and now I'm at 6'2". So that's the only advantage of being a double-leg amputee. Thought I'd add a little bit of lightness to the conversation, if I may.
Well, here I thought you were going to throw the old thing is, you know, there was one good thing because they found somebody in 3C that could use my shoes. You know, I thought that's where we were going with this, Alan. wow. Okay. See, the levity of it all. But I mean, it isn't. And then you look at Forrest Gump and Lieutenant Dan. And the thing is they, you know, they made off. And it all ended well. And it didn't end well for a lot of people that came back here because they were spitting in our face, calling us baby killers. I mean, this was wrong. First off, I mean, we're caught in the middle of not just the elitist war. I mean, we were told, oh, yeah, this was a bet between two hierarchy political elites, and that's why we got into Vietnam. Do you agree with that?
Well, you know, that's a little bit foggy. You know, the original reason was that we thought that all of Southeast Asia would become communist if we didn't make our effort in South Vietnam. Of course, it's ended up that Vietnam has become, quote, somewhat of a capitalistic society, although it's a closed society. I met a missionary that lived in Thailand. He said, Alan, I've lived in Thailand throughout the Vietnam War. I went in the 50s as a missionary. And if America had not come in and tried to stem the tide in Vietnam, all of Southeast Asia would be communist today, to include Thailand, okay? Now, what he said was, but what I know as a soldier and learned from later on, not then, was that we should have interdicted by bombing. I don't care how many of the enemy get killed, whether they were collateral damage or not. The fact is our people are getting killed on the battlefield. There's a larger purpose to be served. Bomb the dikes, mine Haiphong Harbor so those weaponry couldn't get in from East Europe and from Russia and from China, and mine that harbor and send amphibious forces into North Vietnam. So there's a lot of things militarily that for whatever purpose we didn't do. Now, Bill Moyers, who'd been the press secretary for Lyndon B. Johnson, walked into my office one time back in the 70s after the war was over. And I said, Bill, why didn't we win that war? And he's kind of like shocked because that's the first question I asked. And I was in a wheelchair that day, as I recall, because I have to get into my wheelchair every once in a while when I get a sore. So I said, well, you know, that's a pretty heavy question to ask me just walking in your office. But he said, we were worried about international opinion. We were worried about, you know, Russia and China early in the Vietnam War were kind of at odds with each other. We didn't want to stop them from being antagonistic toward each other and maybe turn the world opinion against us. Well, to heck with world opinion. If something is worth doing, do it. You know, forget about the politics. Now, just real quickly on Iraq, I mean, there's a lot of question marks about Iraq, of course, being oil-rich, and Afghanistan being a possibility of being a pipeline coming in from the stands through Afghanistan, you know, over to Pakistan, bringing oil in. Oil has perpetrated and pushed and motivated so many of the wars back for 100 years, ever since we turned to diesel for the naval ships. All of this is all background. You've got to analyze these things. What are the background stories? You know, that all we know is patriotism as young people. We don't understand all that, and I'm not sure that we could even have found it out at the time as an example of all these different things that are happening.
Well, you know, and I'm sure that you have your opinion about the disgrace about the way we exited Afghanistan. I mean, that was sad in of itself. As an ex-military, what's your take on it very quickly?
Yeah, well, that was just really sad. You know, we had a planned withdrawal out of Vietnam, and we took the troops out first and as much equipment as we could. In my opinion, they should have thrown a thermite grenade in every single one of those helicopters that we were not going to take out. We should have had a phased withdrawal there also, take our troops out slowly. We should have kept that Bagram Air Force Base, because I think the Chinese have come in and taken it now. That
yep.
was a debacle. It was a shame. It was a horrible tragedy for the American military after all the bloodshed in that country for 20 years.
No doubt, but not as long as Vietnam. Patrice in Ohio, you're on the phone with Alan Clark. We got a minute. Go ahead.
Well, I just think war is evil, and it's Satan's plan. And if you look in the book of Isaiah 14, the Lord just calls Satan out and says, "How you are fallen from heaven, O shining star, son of the morning. You have been thrown down to the earth. You who destroyed the nations of the world. For you said to yourself, I will ascend to the heavens and set my throne above God's stars. I will preside on the mountain of God, far away from the north. I will climb to the highest heavens and be like the Most High. Instead, you will be brought down to the place of the dead, down to its lowest depths." It's evil.
Yeah. Yep, it is. Well, we appreciate
it's
that input, Patrice.
Evil.
Yep, we know it. And the thing is that,
and,
you know, elitists have benefited
from it. Why was there heroin in all the body bags brought back?
That's a good question.
All the people from Vietnam, because it's a banker drug war for the warlords.
Yep. Buy my book, and you'll learn a lot more.
You will. I swear, Patrice, we appreciate your call. We're out of time. The book is Soldier's Blood and Bloodied Money. Folks, you got to get a copy of this thing. It's on Kindle. Captain Clark, thank you so much for your service and your time.
Soft cover.
We will be back tomorrow. It is Veterans Day tomorrow. And thank you again, Captain Clark, for your service. In the meantime, God bless you and God bless the United States of America.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
I don't know where to start. There's so many products you guys offer. I think one of the first things I ever ordered from you guys was your clay. The clay is miraculous. I could not do without that. And the charcoal, you know, you can get yourself in a bathtub to kind of help take the toxins out. So just those two alone, but I could go on to the Optivita silver lozenges. Of course, then the Oregaresp and the P73, the oil of oregano, and your Vitamir toothpaste. Again, I could go on and on and on.
Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.